So I want to discuss tonight a tshuva written by none other than Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berliner. The Notatel says the Netziv. Again, a landmark tshuva that had a big effect on the way that we react. We've been learning the past few weeks about the status of mumarin l'chalo Shabbos bizman hazeh. Are they considered real mumarim l'chalo Torah kula? How do we treat the irreligious bizman hazeh? Do we give them the status of mumarim l'chalo Torah kula, or perhaps they have the status of tinoik shenishba? So one of the main areas of halacha where this makes a difference is the area of lifnei iver. So I thought it would be a good segue to go into the area of lifnei iver, because obviously anytime you're dealing with people who are not religious, it's very common that you will come to a situation of lifnei iver, lo sitei michshol. Again, just a simple shayla that we'll probably won't get to tonight, but we'll get to eventually, is let's say you're having them over to your house, you give them what to eat, they're not going to make a bracha. Is that a situation of lifnei iver? Anytime you have people that aren't shomer Torah mitzvah, so if you're interacting with them in any sort of healthy way, there's going to be situations where you are aiding and abetting them to do things which are halachically not appropriate. So, whenever you discuss... Yeah, we'll go through everything in Meretz Hashem. Exactly. So we'll start at the beginning. Again, today, we might not get to the exact nuances in halacha, but we'll lay the groundwork and we'll move here on in. So let's discuss a little bit about the Netziv. Who was the Netziv? So the Netziv lived from the year 1816 to the year 1893. There are legends about the Netziv. There's a famous legend about the Netziv, I'm sure all of you have heard, that when the Netziv was younger, he was a very weak student. And in fact, his parents were considering he wasn't succeeding in cheder, and his parents said, you know, this one's not going to be, his father was a chashuv, a rav, he came from a rabbinic dynasty, and this one's not going to be the Talmud Chacham, we'll send him out, different shoemaker, the different versions of the story, shoemaker to build shelves, whatever it might be. And the story is that he heard this, he overheard this, his parents didn't realize that he was there, they thought he was sleeping, and that drove him to dedicate himself to Limud HaTorah, dedicate himself to learning, and eventually he becomes the Netziv. So the story goes that they could imagine that if he would have became, I forgot who said this exactly, imagine Achameva Esrim, he would have gone up to Bezen Shalmal after making so many shoes, and they would have said, the Netziv, where's your Hamik She'ela on the She'otas? Where's your Hamik Dover ala Torah? Where's your Meshiv Dover, the Chuvas? Where are they? You made a bunch of shoes, you could have produced so much. And the postscript to the story is a certain Rosh Yeshiva that told some of his Talmidim, he said that they don't realize that the opposite is true also. Sometimes you have people sitting and learning in yeshiva all day, and they get up to Bezen Shalmata and they say, you were sitting and learning, wear all the shoes, you should have been a shoemaker. So it depends, it cuts both ways. But that's the legendary story about the Netziv. Whether it's true or not is hard to know. The idea that the Netziv was a weak student could theoretically be true. The idea that he was nothing special till later in life is most probably not true. The person who did a great amount of work on this, wrote his doctorate on this, is a man by the name of Gil Pearl, Rabbi Gil Pearl, Dr. Gil Pearl. He grew up in my neighborhood, so when I was a kid, he's much older than I am, but when I was a child, he was writing his doctorate. So I would always ask him questions about the Netziv. I was fascinated by the fact that he's writing his doctorate on the Netziv. So I read a few pieces, I read a lot of the thing when I was younger, and he argues very, very legitimate arguments and says that this whole idea that the Netziv, again, it could be he wasn't the strongest student, but to say that he was a weak student today, that he wasn't smart, like many of the stories go, that he wasn't a smart person, and it was just purely his amelus that trudged him through, is hard to imagine. Again, we're talking about a person who married Itzler Volozhiner's daughter at the age of 13 and a half. Now, at that time, the premier yeshiva, the only yeshiva, was really Yeshiva's Volozhin. The Rosh Yeshiva was Rav Itzler Volozhin, the son of Rav Chaim Volozhin. In those days, there was very little going into shidduch other than, is this guy going to be the next Rosh Yeshiva? So to say that he was very weak and that he wasn't such a smart kid and that 13 and a half, he gave his daughter to this lo yitzlach is a hard thing to imagine. That's the argument he makes there. And it's a very sound, what? Okay, Enochanami, it's not foolproof, but that's the argument he makes over there. Interesting argument. He has a few other stories as well. Again, doesn't mean that he was the Rashka Bahag. There are certain sources, very, very, very good sources that seem to indicate that people definitely didn't know the extent of his brilliance. The story goes that his father-in-law walked in, even, well, once he was an older man, he was already in, not an older man, but he was already saying shiurim in Volozhin, I believe. He was in Volozhin, and his father-in-law chanced upon his notes, and he saw that he had correspondence with some of the G'dayli Ador. He didn't realize what type of level the Netziv was on. That's very likely that could have been true, that the breath, and if you read any of his Sfarim, you see this simply, like, unparalleled breath, in terms of all, not only Shas and Yerushalmi, but all of the Midrashim, all the Medrashei Halacha. Again, everything was open book, and he had a very unique style, and had a grasp on things which weren't so popular to have a grasp upon. But again, this was the Netziv. He married at 13 and a half, as we mentioned before. He ultimately earns the position as Rosh Yeshiva when his father-in-law is Nifter. For a certain point of time, it goes to his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law was Nifter young. Then it transfers to the Netziv. The Netziv becomes Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Volozhin. Under his reign as Rosh Yeshiva, the yeshiva grows and is very healthy, gets stronger and stronger. At a certain point, there's another one of Reb Chaim Volozhiner's descendants comes in to start giving shiurim. Who was that? The Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi starts giving shiurim, a little bit of a different style, a very different style than the Netziv. And the Beis Halevi begins to get very, very popular. And then, you know, when you have two major, huge forces, the Beis Halevi, you can imagine one yeshiva under one roof. You have the Beis Halevi and you have the Netziv. So they each have their followings. And when they each have their followings, no doubt what happens is that it's not so healthy for yeshiva. Ein shnei malachim bekezer echad, right? Can't have two malachim. So there was a din Torah. It got too much. The different history books describe it differently. Was it the Talmidim that got in arguments? Whatever it was, they decided to go to a din Torah. They went to a din Torah of the G'dayli Hador. The G'dayli Hador decided the yeshiva is the Netzivs, and the Beis Halevi left. But just to show you how there were no hard feelings, it was simply a din Torah. They accepted the psak. The Beis Halevi's grandson was Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik married who? The granddaughter of the Netziv. And he comes back and he comes to say shir in Volozhin. So it does come full circle. And the story plays out again. If you read some of the history books, when Reb Chaim Brisker comes to Volozhin, Netziv is still Rosh Yeshiva. So the same thing happens. Reb Chaim Brisker, we know, has his own Derech HaLimud. And a very similar thing happens. There's multiple stories of the Talmidim of Reb Chaim coming to him, asking him certain questions, asking him, talking and learning, and him sensing that perhaps they didn't respect the Netziv as much as they should have. And then he starts saying shir, everything he says, every chiddush he would say, Reb Zevin brings in an Ishim Vashitas, that whenever he would sense that the Talmidim weren't respecting the Netziv as much as they should, and then he would start saying chiddushim, and he'd say, you know who told me that chiddush? That was my father, that was my grandfather-in-law, that was the Netziv, and that came from the Netziv, in order to make sure that the Talmidim didn't overlook. Because again, it was an exciting new Derech HaLimud, but you can't let that blind you from the greatness of the Netziv. So that was the yeshiva. There is during the Netziv's reign, the yeshiva did close down. That was the first time Volozhin or yeshiva closed down. And there's much, much speculation as to why the yeshiva closed down. Common perception was for many, many years that the reason the yeshiva Volozhin closed down is because the Russian government forced them to introduce some sort of secular studies, too much, more than the Netziv would want. Some is the machlokas exactly how much they were forcing. They're forcing that all the Magidei Shir get a degree, whatever it might be. It was too much, and the Netziv decided it's not worth it anymore, we're closing down. And there's a tshuva that he writes in his tshuvas, Meshiv Dover, where he discusses such a topic. He doesn't say specifically that we're closing down because of this, but he does discuss the topic of learning secular studies. There are other historians that now have tried to argue that that wasn't the reason, but the reason was also from the reason it closed down was they were compelled to by the Russian government for more political reasons. They were nervous about the fact that it was a center for intellectual study. And they were nervous about the Haskalah movement, although it was a petri dish for people with liberal thoughts. They were nervous what it was going to be doing to the government per se, and therefore they closed it down. Again, it's not exactly clear why that would force it, that the Volozhin Yeshiva was such a strong movement that the government was actually concerned. I don't know, it was a little bit hard for me to understand, but I don't know the politics of the time. But there are different perceptions of why exactly Volozhin Yeshiva closed down. But be that as it may, the Yeshiva closed down, And the Netziv spends the rest of his life, he hopes ultimately to go to Eretz Yisrael. He never makes it there, very similar to the Vilna Gaon. Actually, this Dr. Pearl does argue many aspects that the Netziv was trying to follow the steps of Vilna Gaon. The Netziv wrote on Medrashei Halacha, as we mentioned before. What did the Netziv write on? He wrote Hamek She'ela on the She'iltas of Rav Chai Gaon. Again, something which was a closed book before him. He comes and says, we're going to start learning the Gaonim. He writes a ton on Medrashei Halacha. He has on the Mechilta. He has on other Midrashim. So he was opening books. He was learning things that weren't normally learned. He wrote his Hamek Dover. What was the point of Hamek Dover? The point of Hamek Dover, like many of the Achronim of the time, was almost a response to the Haskalah. They were trying to synthesize the Torah Shebaal Peh together with the Torah Shebaal Ksav so that there shouldn't be a gap. That's what he tries to do in Hamak Dover, just like the Ksav HaKabbalah tries to do, just like the Malbim tries to do, in order to show how Chazal were playing off the Pshuto Shel Mikra. They weren't just making things up. So again, much of his work was in this line, trying to bring from the source all the way down to what we have in Torah Shebaal Peh, and much of it could be viewed as a response to the Haskalah. So let's take a look at the tshuva that I want to discuss tonight. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvaro. Marmokum number one. The Netziv was faced with the following shaila. Im mutter lezaveg isha leish. Are you mad? Is it permitted to make a shidduch between two people? Asher yiduim heima le'ovrei avera, that you know that they're not religious. V'yavru al iser nida, and you know they're not going to keep taras ha'mishpacha. V'afilu ein zeh kitrei avrei denara. As we will discuss, there's two, whenever you are aiding and abetting people and doing an iser, there are two types of situations. There's a situation where they could not have done the iser without you. That's called trei avrei denara. You're on one side of the river, they're on the other side of the river. They can't get the usher thing. The nazir can't get the cup of wine because it's on the other side of the river. He needs you to do the iser. That's called trei ivri dinara. And then there's another case where he could do it without you, but yet you are assisting him, you are helping him. That's considered chad ivri dinara. He could go, you're all on the same bank of the river, he could go and get the wine himself. Instead, he asks you to hand it to him. So one is trei ivri dinara, the other is chad ivri dinara. So it says in its tzivis files, vafilu einzek.
One is impossible
without the middle step, and one is possible without me. The question is from the person.
Yeah.
The
question is if they're married. You know, they got married, which is not the issur, and the need is the second part.
Right. So we're not. So that's a separate question. We're not dealing with that yet. We're dealing with one question. Was it possible for the issur to take place without me? I want to know if this is an Isser Lifnei Iver for me. Am I the one aiding and abetting the Isser? So the main question that we have to ask is, could the Isser have been done without me? That's the only question we're dealing with so far. Then we'll get to that question in a second. The question you're doing. They tell you.
Maybe that's the one mitzvah that they would want to keep.
Okay. Okay. That's a separate question. Let's say we know for a fact they won't. Again, then you could get involved in a separate question of, in a specific situation where a person's not religious, do you have to assume that they won't keep it? That's a separate question. But now, for our purposes, we are assuming that we know that they're not. Now the question is, am I allowed to make this shidduch if they're not keeping the halachas? Am I aiding and abetting them in not keeping these halachas? Okay. So it says in Netziv, Vafilu ein zeh kitrei avrei dinara. And even though you'll tell me that this is comparable to a case where they're on the same side of the river, they could have been over this isra without me. They don't need me to be the mishadech. If this person doesn't find this wife, so find someone else to marry. He'll be over the isra with someone else. Diyesh v'zeh mishum lifne iver kide isa b'mesechas v'rezar. Mikom makom v'yisrael osu l'sayeya le'over ever. It's still, even though it's on one side of the river, and it's possible to do the iser without me, it's still misayeya le'over ever. You are helping, you are aiding someone in doing an avera. Afilu v'oifen she'em b'zeh mishum lifne iver. Even if there might not be lifne iver in this case, because it was possible to do without me, it's chad ivre denara. Still, it could be usher because you are helping him do an iser, and that's still usher. So this is the basic question of the Netziv. Is this something which would be usher because I know, for however I know it, I know that they're not keeping taras ha-mishpacha, or no, that's not my problem, I'm mishadich them, and they could do what they want. So just to put the question in a little bit of a different context, we probably won't get to this Shaila tonight, but Bli Neder will discuss it in the coming shir. The Sri De'esh of Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg was asked a very similar question, a question which perhaps is more relevant. Not a question of whether I could be the matchmaker, if I could go to the singles event and I can match the two people, but could I be the Mesader Kedushin? Two people that were married, and they came to me, they want to get married in a religious ceremony. Am I allowed to do such a thing? He says, they're telling me they're not going to keep the Isurim of Nida. Am I allowed to be Mesader Kiddushin? So this question is a little bit differently, because chances are, if he says no, okay, so we won't get married religiously, we'll go back to living with each other, not going to stop it at all. Okay, so let's learn the sugya. So let's take a look, let's take a step back. Go over to Marmokam number 2. Marmokam number 2 says, in Parshas Kiddushin, says the Pasuk, Lo sikal cheresh v'lifnei iver, lo sitein michshol. In front of a blind person, you can't put a stumbling block. V'yereisa melokecha ni Hashem. And you must fear God. Again, Rashi explains, based on Chazal, why does it end off v'yereisa melokecha ni Hashem? Because very often it's hard to know whether a person was intending to fool a person or not. So it's just between you and God. No one knows was your intention to make that person stumble or not. Only you know what was in your heart of hearts. Any time that it's an issur that is subject just to what a person's desire was in their heart of hearts. So it says, v'yereisa melokecha. You might not realize that everyone else, you might know that no one else knows, but realize that God is watching you. So lifnei iver leisitein michshol. You can't put a stumbling block in front of a person. What does this issur include? So this issur includes basically two separate things. Includes, for instance, giving someone bad advice, that we won't be discussing tonight. Someone asks you for advice on business that you're knowledgeable about, and you give them poor advice intentionally. So that's lifnei iver. Another way of lifnei iver, what we will be discussing tonight, is that you assist someone in being over an iser. That's lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. There is an interesting discussion in the Rishonim. Is literally putting a stumbling block in front of a literally blind person, is that part of the iser of lifnei iver? Is the literal sense of this pasuk included the iser, or the pasuk is clearly only talking metaphorically and talking about conceptually about lifnei iver, but not in reality, not a literal lifnei iver lo sitein michshol.
How is this shaira different from inviting somebody who's not religious to your house Friday night for a Shabbos dinner?
And you know the drive.
And they know they're going to drive home.
It's a very similar shaira. That's exactly. This is
that's
so then it's
across America.
Okay, so we got to discuss. We'll get to all these
shaira. America.
So we have to discuss it. So let's look at the sugya. Take a look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Vav Amud Aleph, Marmokam number 3. Says the Gemara, Toshma. The Gemara over here is discussing the type of business that you're not, that is forbidden to do with Ovdei Kochavim before their holidays. Toshma. Lifnei, the beginning of Avodah Zarah. Lifnei Idei and Shalom Ovdei Kochavim, before the holidays of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Shloshah Yavim, 3 days. Ibayil, you're not allowed to do business with them in certain matters. So says the Gemara, why can't I do business with them? Ask the Gemara, Ibayilahu. Mishum harvacha, is it because they're gonna make a lot of money? They're gonna be happy about this deal. What happens when he's happy about this deal? His yomtif is coming up in a few days. He's gonna go to his avodah zarah. He's gonna serve his avodah zarah. Thank you so much for making this money. So we're nervous that we're gonna end up causing him to be avodah zarah. We don't want him to praise his avodah zarah. So that's why it's also to do business with him. Oh, yidilma, mishum lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. Perhaps the reason is because lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, that it's a case of lifnei iver. What's the case of lifnei iver? So let's see. What's the
first one is only doesn't apply to a Jew, applies only to a guy, to a
what do you mean? What?
The
right, exactly. So that you can't do business with the akum because you're nervous that he's going to.
That doesn't mean that you couldn't invite a Mechal Shabbos who's Jewish. Your house.
Yeah, we're going to have to get to that. This is the primary source. We'll have to work our way up to that.
What's if this guy's going to go to his avodah zarah and say thank you? So what's my concern?
We don't want to cause him to do that. What?
He's not a Jew.
Okay, avodah zarah is usher. We're talking about a religion that is usher for a non-Jew to do. If it's a religion which is mutter, again, you have to get involved if there is such a thing as religion that is mutter. But assuming there is a concept of a non-Jewish monotheistic religion, so then, in a chanami, then it would be fine. We're talking about religions which are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's also for him as well.
He's
chayv misa. Because one is more direct, as we will see. One is more direct. One is a concern that he will end up doing some sort of service, but we're not literally, as you'll see, as opposed to the case of where we're nervous that he's going to actually bring the animal, so then that is a direct lefne'iver. I am helping him bring this animal to his God. As the Gemara says, Odilma mishum lefne'iver. What's lefne'iver? So what's nafkamina? The islay behema l'didei. Let's say he already has his own animal. If you tell me it's because he's going to do well in business and then go thank his God, so at the end of the day, even if he has his own animal, if you do business with him, he's going to be happy that he got more assets, that he did well in his business. He has his own animal, so he'll bring his own animal. What are you nervous? He's going to bring your animal to the Mizbeach, to the Avodah Zarah? He'll bring his own animal. So again, what's the Gemara saying? How do I know? The Gemara says, why is it aser for me to sell an animal to a non-Jew before his Avodah Zarah? The Gemara says, two separate reasons. Either because harvacha, you do business with him, he's going to be so happy, it's going to end up causing, he's going to thank his God. We don't want him to thank his God for whatever reason. Or no, we're nervous that it's lifnei iver because he's going to take this animal and he's going to sacrifice it to his God. What's the difference if it's lifnei iver mishum harvacha? So says the Gemara, well, it depends. Let's say he has his own animal. He has a whole flock of animals. So he, regardless of what you do, in 3 days from now, he's going to sacrifice an animal to his God. You can't stop that. He has tons of animals. Now, you're going to sell him another animal. So that's not lifnei iver, says the Gemara. He's going to do it on his own anyway. So I'm selling him one more animal, even if he ends up using my animal. At the end of the day, he was going to do it anyway. The Gemara says that is not lifnei iver. So what's the difference if the reason is harvacha, because he's going to go thank his God, or because he's going to use this animal for the Avodah Zarah? What's the nafkamina if he has his own animal? If it's because he's going to use this animal for Avodah Zarah and it's lifnei iver, I am causing him to do Avodah Zarah. So then he has his own animal. I'm not causing him. He's going to do the Avodah Zarah on his own anyway. So now he's one more animal to do it with. That's not lifnei iver. Anytime, the Gemara is basically telling us, anytime the person could do the Isser on his own without my assistance, that's not lifnei iver. But if the Isser is because of harvacha, because we're nervous he's going to go thank his God, so then any added harvacha, any added value in his assets would be something we would be concerned about, and we'd say no business, even if he has a whole flock worth of animals. So that's what the Gemara says. And if he has another animal that he could sacrifice on his own, so then you're telling me there's no lifnei iver because I'm not helping him do it because he could have done it anyway? That means there's no lifnei iver when a person could do the iser on his own? But we have a brisa. What does the brisa say? How do we know that a nazir comes to me and asks for a cup of wine, that I'm not allowed to hand him the cup of wine? And how do we know that if a guy asks me for Eivir Minachai, that I'm not allowed to hand him the Eivir Minachai? Tamid Loimar v'lifnei Iver lo sitei michsha. That's the Issa of lifnei Iver. I'm handing a wine to a Nazir, which is Aser to him. I'm handing Eivir Minachai to a guy, which is Aser to him. Lifnei Iver lo sitei michsha. V'ahacha d'chilo yavinan le'shaklihu. But you're telling me that any time that they don't need me, they don't need my assistant, it's not lifnei iver. So why when I hand a bottle of wine to a nazir, is that lifnei iver? If I don't hand it to him, he could just go and take it. So that shouldn't be lifnei iver. He doesn't need my help in the process. Even if I help him, he didn't need me there. So that shouldn't be lifnei iver, says the Gemara. Answers the Gemara, no. We're talking about a case, Hacha b'mayaskinon, Dekai betray Avri Dinara. We're talking about a case where they are on two separate sides of the river. The bottle of wine is on this side of the river, and the Nazir is on this side of the river. So if I don't hand him the bottle of wine, he's not getting the wine. No boats, he doesn't know how to swim. So he will not do the Isser if I don't hand it to him. So then, he can't do the Isser without me handing him the bottle of wine. That means when I do hand him the bottle of wine, that is real lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. So what comes out of this Gemara, simply, very clearly, seems to be from this Gemara, is that a person asks you, what is lifnei iver lo sitein michshol? When I'm assisting someone in doing an Avera, that they could not have done without my assistance. Seems to be the pashtus in the Gemara, no way to argue about it. If they could have done the Avera without my assistance, and I am just making it a little bit easier for them, it seems clear from the Gemara that that would not be lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. The question is, does that mean that it's mutter? Any time that they don't need my assistance if I am allowed to assist them. So this is a big machlokes between the Rishonim. Take a look at Tosis. Tosis says, in Marmakam number 4, we'll skip down to the boldface, where Tosis says, Minayin shel yosher, on this Gemara, says Tosis, Umayri b'tekai b'makam shel yuchal likach im lo yisha lo zeh. Uchedemasik dekoy betray ivrei denara. Tosis seems to paskin like the maskana of Gemara, that Tosis goes through that it's also to hand someone. That's what the beginning of Tosis is talking about, the case of the Gemara. It's also to hand something to someone that is, which is also to him. And Tosis says, but it's only also if it's betray avrei denara on two sides of the river, because he couldn't have done it without you. However, take a look at the next Maramakum, the Chidushei Haritva, where he says as follows. Kol heichad matzi avidi sura shelo ayodenu lesa mishum v'lifne iver ve'af al pisha efsher shehu marbe be'isra ayodenu loichashina avol mikol makom itavale beferish leisura nehi demishum lifne iver leka akati ika isura b'milsa mishum misayeya yedei ovrei avera. Kol she'anu garmin lo la'asos iser, says the Ritva, tremendous chiddush. Even though it's not considered lifnei iver lo siten mirshol, there is still an iser called misayeya lidvar avera, an iser derabanan. So now, according to the Ritva, we have a two-tiered system. If I am aiding and abetting someone in doing an iser, which they could not have done without me, they needed me to get them the pork, so that's lifnei iver, that is asur midaraisa. But if the pork is on the other side of the street, and they'll go and cross the street if they need to, but I'm going anyway, so they asked me to bring it across for them. They didn't need me to do it. They could have done it on their own. So that's not an iser deraisa of lifnei iver, but it is an iser derabanan of misayeya lidvar avera. I'm not allowed to aid and abet someone in an iser, even if they could have done it on their own. So we have a machlokes between Tosis and a machlokes between Tosis and the Ritva. When they could have done it on their own, when the people could have done it on their own, is there an iser midrabanan? Obviously very relevant to every case. Take a look at the Ran in Maramakum number 6, where the Ran says, Deka nami diktani lo yoshit, deloshen hoshata miyat mashma, shu eno yachalin notlo, where he can't take it. Umihu mashma, dahainu mi li le'inyin daraisa. That's only with regard to the iser daraisa. But still, midrabanan miha asar, it's still asar. Even if they could have done it without you, midrabanan, there's still going to be an iser. It's still asar. So, according to the Ritva, according to the Ran, even when they could have done it without you, in our case of the Nitziv, where you are making a shidduch between people that won't keep taras and mishpacha, he's assuming, well, they both could have found a match on their own. They didn't need you to specifically help them find each other. So if that's the case, is there an iser lifnei iver? Well, it depends. According to Tosis, you're off the hook. No iser daraisa, because they could have done it on their own. They didn't need you. According to the Ritva and the Ran, even though they didn't need you, there's still an iser mi derabanan. The problem is as follows. Let's take a look in Maramakam number 10. Where the Rush tells us his shita. What does the Rush say? Says the Rush in Maramakum number 10. Actually, let's take a look at Maramakum number 11, where the Rush says as follows. Ukemi bayalai, haida asu limkor lahem midi dechazi letakroves avodas kachavim. It's also for us to sell to non-Jews things which they are going to bring on their mizbeach to their avodas zara. Mishum harvacha dechishiyesh lo harbe lahakel avodas zara lekachavim who makriv berevach. Umin hamuvchar umishabeach avodas kachavim. And he goes and he's mishabeach his avodas kachavim shal. Shezim neliyado lahakriv berevach umin hamuvchar. Vaafilu yesh lo kiroi lahakriv asur limkor lo. O Dilma Dafka Mishum Lifne Iver, Vi Isle Behema Lidide Shari. So it seems like the Rush is telling us exactly like Tosis. If it's because of Lifne Iver, again the last line, O Dilma Dafka Mishum Lifne Iver, perhaps the Isser is only because of Lifne Iver, and if the Isser is because of Lifne Iver, if they have their own animals, says the Rush, it's mutter. So it sounds like the Rush is passing like Tosis. That the only time it would be Usr, even midrabanan, the only time it would be usr is if they couldn't have done it without me. If I am the one facilitating the isr, they could have done it without me, says the Rosh, then it is mutter. The problem is, take a look at the Rosh in Maramakum number 10, where the Rosh tells us at the beginning of Masechah Shabbos, we're talking about person's inside the house and a person is outside the house. And your pet transferring something from, right, the first Mishnah in Shabbos. Your pet transferring something from the inside to the outside. So the Gemara over there discusses a case is of Lifnei Iver. You're helping someone carry from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim. So says the Rosh as follows. The kasha, the hechika amr de potter. How are we saying that you're allowed to do this? That it's potter umutter legamre. You're allowed to hand something to someone on the other side of the rishos. V'ha'haka avr mishum lifnei iver losite mishal. You're going to be over lifnei iver losite mishal. You give something to someone who's standing in rishos harabim. You know they're going to carry it into the rishos hayachid. That's lifnei iver. You help them do Hautzah on Shabbos, Liftei Iver, Losite Milcher, says the Rosh. Ukemo Moshe Kaus Yain LeNozer. And it's the same thing as giving wine to the Nozer. Ve'Aver Menachai Livnei Noach. It's Aser, Aser Midaraisa. It says the Rosh keywords over here. Ve'ein Lomer De Hocha Mayri Bichi Hai Gavno. De Afilu Imlo Haya Nosna Biyodo. Haya Yachol Litlo. And don't tell me it's talking about a case where even if I would not have handed it to him, he could have done it on his own. Again, which is our case of Misayeya, a case of where they didn't need me, but I was still aiding him, which we said is machoikis between Toisus and the Ran. So the Rosh says, and don't tell me that's the case, and that's why it's not Lifnei Iver. Da'afilum lo hayanos v'yado hayayachol leilo, da'ashto leka mishlum Lifnei Iver, because then it wouldn't be a case of Lifnei Iver, lo yisitei mechshol, k'demuchach in avodah zarah. Even if you're going to tell me it was a case where they didn't need me to do it, says the Rosh, there is still going to be an Isser Midirabanan. Why? Because just like I am Mitzuveh too, if I see someone doing an Isser, I have to be mafreshim from the Isser. I have to take the pork sandwich and throw it out. So certainly I'm not allowed to help him do the Isser. So the Rosh is saying clearly over here that even if he could have done the Isser on his own, I'm still not allowed to help him. Yet the Rosh told us in Maseches Avodah Zarah that if he couldn't have done it on his own, then it's permitted. So we seem to have a clear contradiction in the Rosh. Again, the Rosh told us in Maseches Avodah Zarah, the only problem is, Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol. The only problem is that if he needs you to do the Isser, you can't assist him. If he doesn't need you, no problem. It's Shari, it's Mutter, go ahead, hand him the cheeseburger. However, the Rosh tells us in Maseches Shabbos that's not the case. Rosh tells us that even if he doesn't need you, it's only Misayeya, it's still going to be Aser. It seems to be a clear contradiction in the Rosh. Does the Rosh hold that Misayeya, again, let's label our terms, Lifnei Iver is when the person could not have done the Iser without you. Misayeya is when you were helping him, but he could have done it without you. So the Misayeya, whether that is Aser or Mutter, is a Machlokas Rishonim. But in the Rosh himself, it seems to be a Stira. In one Masechta, the Rosh tells us that Misayeya is Mutter. In the other case, the Rosh seems to tell us Misayeya is Aser. What's the distinction? Let's hear. What?
Not directly Misayeya, because he already has a behemoth. Whereas here in Shabbos, you're actually being Misayeya.
What's the distinction? What's the distinction? What's the difference?
He needs you. Without.
In both cases, he doesn't need you. He could do without.
No. But here you're helping him accomplish what he wants, whereas the other one, you're not helping him do the Aveira itself, you just gave him the behemoth, which he already has.
Very good. So there are two ways to answer this question. Based on this steer in the Rosh, and this is the reason why I'm focusing it so much, all the kulas in Lifnei Iver, and again, we will need the kulas, as you pointed out, we run into these situations very frequently. Again, the more people that aren't religious, so the more we're going to run into these situations. So we run into the situation all the time. And there are different kulas, and we will investigate the different kulas. But almost every kula is based on how to answer this Rosh. The Rosh tells us in one place that Misayeya is Aser. The Rosh tells us in another place that Misayeya is Mutter. So obviously, in some cases he holds his Mutter, in some cases he holds his Aser. We have to figure out the case he holds his Mutter, because that will be very helpful for us, because we'll know, then as long as we make it a case similar to the Rosh, it's Mutter. So the Netziv has one approach. What's the approach of the Netziv? Again, we're gonna be full short on time here, but let's just try to answer this theory in the Rosh. Take a look at the tshuva of the Netziv. the fifth line of the paragraph of the tshuva, in the middle of that line, he has a word that says aval. See it? Aval aleinu liyashiv. Where he asks this question on the rush, and he's going to answer the question. Aval aleinu liyashiv ruma d'shtei haras atosis v'arash. We have to answer the contradiction that is in the rush. The rush in one place says misayeya is aser, but maseches Shabbos and maseches avodah zarah. And in the other place he says misayeya is mutter. V'gam hadas nosin shel olam aser lisayeya yidei avavrevera. And in the end of the day, how could the rush even tell us? Forget this stira. How could anyone say? We just said there's a machlekes we're showing him whether misayeya, aiding someone in doing an iser, is asar mutter. How could anyone hold that it is permitted to aid someone in doing an iser? If I see someone doing an iser, I have to stop them. I have to take the cheeseburger and throw it in the garbage. And you're going to tell me I'm allowed to assist him? It makes no sense. How could that be? Says the Meshiv Dover, says in Itziv, V'gam hadas no sin shel olam asur l'sayei. It's obvious that it's always asur. It's always forbidden to help him. Yidei ovrever. Shafilu chayv lahafrish es chaveru Yisrael. Because I'm obligated to separate him from the iser. So of course I can't assist him in the iser. Uchid isu babakama. Shakol mitzuvin alav levaro. Kadei shelo yavar chaveru. Everyone's obligated to get rid of chamit so that no one is over in the iser. Mikol shekein shelo yasa siyua sheyasa vera. So obviously I can't help him. Ukvar kosav hagon hamechaber binyan tzion. That's what we learned about last week. So the binyan tzion, Yaakov Etlinger offers the following explanation to answer the rush. Liyashiv rumya de piskei atosis v'arush. De imehu misayeya b'sha'ah she'ose avera v'adai aser b'chol inyin u'mechoyev lahafrisho im yachol. Masha enkein shelo b'sha'as avera ela she'achar kachoshet she'yaseh avera b'zeh. Eino osir ela betray ivre dinara. Vizeh hachiluk emes uborer ledasa toysha rush. Answers the Nitziv. How am I going to answer the question of the rush? It depends. Again, we can't be too clear over here. If we're talking about a case where the person could not do the issur without you, there's nothing to talk about, that's called trey ivre dinara. They need you. You can't help them regardless as an issur deraisa. Now we're talking about a case of where they don't need you. The shidduch could go through without you. You're Masada Kedushin, they'll find someone else. Am I allowed to aid them in doing the aveira? So the Rosh says, it depends. It depends what we're talking about. If it's bishas the aveira, the minute you assist them, they'll be doing the iser. I hand him the wine, he drinks the wine. I hand him the cheeseburger, he eats the cheeseburger. So then I can't, the iser misayeh. I hand the person something that in the Rishus HaYachid, he's about to go out and bring it to Rishus HaRabim, that's bishas the iser, that's for sure also, that's misayeh. But if I am just enabling him to do an iser, right now he's not doing an iser, but I'm enabling him to do an iser down the road, so then says the Rosh Hashanah, no, misayeh l'day over ever. So it, exactly. So I'm giving him an animal, and who knows what he's going to do to the animal. He'll bring the animal to a carbon. That's not happening right now. So then there's no misayeh. So says the Nitziv, according to Tosfos and the Rosh, it would seem to be that in our case it's not a problem. Again, we've only gotten halfway so far because we don't know if we pass in like Tosfos and the Rosh. But according to Tosfos and the Rosh, it seems to be that it won't be a problem. Why? Because what am I doing? There's not the shas the iser. They're not being over an iser right now when I am mishadech them. I'm marrying them off. I'm the misadech kedushin. I'm mishadech them. Whatever it is. And they get married. And then the isurim that will take place are down the road. So since first element is that it could have happened without me. Second element is that even when I help out, the iser is not taking place right away. So according to Tosfos and the Rosh, it seems to be that these cases where the iser is not happening right away would be permitted. The question is, what do we do with the other shitas? What do we do with the shitas of the Ran? What do we do with the shita of the Ritva that seem to say clearly that there is always going to be an iser of helping someone do an avera? There's always going to be an iser midrabanan of misayeya. We have to see how we paskin, and if we do paskin like that, how is the Nitziv going to manipulate those shitas and tell us whether it is mutter to do these type of things, which we'll continue blinether next week.
Mishnayos and Shviyos.
Yeah, we'll get to Mishnayos and Shviyos.
They use the same lumbus by inviting people over your house for Shabbos. If they come before Shabbos, possible that after the meal, let's say they were inspired, they might not drive home. But they use that same logic that's not definitely clear that they're going to drive home. You have to give them a place to stay.
I just had the situation of the Lama Chakiva. He invited a couple who were not Shomer Shabbos, and we attended the meal Friday night. And he said the Rebbe's view was that during the time they're going to drive anyway, do other things.
When the issue becomes a law, like the guy didn't want to make the
cake.
Wedding for the cake. Or the woman that she went to jail because, so are you allowed to go to jail?
The Nitziv will be very relevant to that. The Nitziv will be very, the Nitziv is the most often quoted in that context. So we'll get to that.
Because he,
that was
crazy countries.
In which case? Why not?
Because it's so far removed. There is. So far removed. You know, can happen, let's say, for 5 hours.
To work through this
detriment. So, is that a Messiah there?
I think based on the cases we have.
I know that they seem to think it.
But I think based on the cases we will see. We'll see cases that if a person harvests grapes with a person that doesn't keep tumah tahara, let's say, and he's not going to be metame them till way later. Still, the Gemara seems to assume that would be a case of Messiah and Machzik Ideya. So, well, we'll get to these cases. It gets a little complicated. I just wanted to lay the groundwork, the basis.
Yeah. Chalas Shabbos is working in your house for the plumber, and he asks for tinus, and he asks for a glass of water. You give it to him because if you're not going to give it to him, you make him
worse.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that shuva. That's what we'll get to.
There's a finished chazan shuva about the tension.
Yeah, we did it last week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I got into a fight with someone. My first year in Yisrael, the guy walks up from the meal on Shabbos. He may have had a camera with him or something. He said, "Yo, I can't give him that." I said, How could you not give him away?
But I'm trying to show that the mummer aspect has a kula and a chumra. Meaning now it's, if you say mummer is a tinek shenishba, so generally speaking, it could be a kula because we could accept him.
Right.
When it comes to lifnei iver, it's a chumra. Because lifnei iver, if they're a mummer, it's much easier to get around these issues.
So once again, it's a chumra mitzad who mitzad the person who's messiah?
Yeah. Because we'll see the halachas of lifnei iver when it comes to a mummer are much
more. Real lifnei iver.
Right, exactly. Because he's real. Right.
First,
you
got to explain what a mummer is and what a
minute.
Right.
Well, that we discussed last week. What a mummer is. Okay, a minute.
What point is a person a minute? What point is a person a minute?